war nerds, and like they're kind of debating on like, yeah, here's why the Saab Gripen is better than the
F-35. Everyone has a role in society. Yeah. I need someone to analyze that because I'm not. everyone plays a role in a community.
And you have these people out there who are kind of, I guess, just having fun doing a bunch of this very tech-heavy research about these fighter jets. If I can become a Saab salesman right now, they talk about how the Gripen jet is like really tech heavy in a way that it's like it's easy to upgrade. It gets upgrades every week because the issue with older ones that were less software focused was that they would kind of become outdated in big chunks, where Saab says their jets is actually going to be able to be like updated on the weekly, and it's not like there's going to be some big period of time where it becomes outdated and then it's a larger capital investment.
That's kind of scary though.
Something that can be innovated every week by week is a bit scary. Well, it's like our phones, right?
Be a human in the world. Yeah, this kind of technology that does that. And so can you tell me about some of the scandals they've had? The way we came across this is honestly from, I was so ignorant. I thought Saab was just a car company, but like many things.
I love the cars.
There's an expanded universe for all of these corporations and capitalism to be invested in so many other things. So just like when you decide to use some AI, it's actually probably killing people, right?
Yeah.
There's all these pieces. So yeah, I want to know about why this car company actually is so much more malicious in its other work.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting because I think the story of Saab does sort of mimic a lot of the car industry where I don't know if people or viewers are familiar with Saabs. Maybe I'll have like a nice picture of a Saab right here.
And you want to tell people how much you love this car?
I do love that car. That car that you're looking at is a Saab 900 convertible. I think these cars are gorgeous. If you watch the movie, the Japanese film Drive My Car, the Saab 900 is featured in it. It's a gorgeous car.
There's a recent episode of Habibzi Please. Find the show archives at habibzipleas.substack.com or wherever you get your podcasts, and at harbingermedianetwork.com. You listen to Harbinger Showcase coming up next. Broadcasting since 2020, Tech Won't Save Us is an internationalist left-wing tech podcast featuring Paris Marx in St. John's, Newfoundland. On this highlight from the show's recent end-of-year retrospective, Paris welcomes tech critics Jathan Sadowski and Brian Merchant to discuss the worst people in Silicon Valley in 2025 and what they'll be keeping an eye on in the new year. Now, here's Paris.
Hello and welcome to Tech Won't Save Us, made in partnership with The Nation magazine. I'm your host, Paris Marx, and this week we have a little bit of a different episode. Usually we're doing interviews or occasionally, you know, I might do a commentary on a particular topic, but this week I'm presenting to you a conversation that I had with Jathan Sadowski and Brian Merchant to kind of wrap up the year in tech. So, you know, it's going to be a bit more conversational than the episodes that we usually have on the show, but I'm sure you're still going to enjoy it because we really get into some of the biggest stories that we think happened this year in the tech industry and in society more generally, the effects of those things, and also the issues that we will be watching going into 2026 if you're interested in what might be on the top of our radars. And of course, if you follow Tech Won't Save Us on social media, you will probably have noticed that we were running a Worst Person in Tech contest for 2025, something that we do every single year. And so this live stream happened last week for Patreon supporters, but you will also, you know, hear us discuss who we think the worst person in tech is and who ultimately won that contest. If you follow us on social media, you will already know the winner. And just briefly, of course, if you're not familiar, Jathan Sadowski is the author of The Mechanic and the Luddite, co-host of This Machine Kills, and a senior lecturer at Monash University, while Brian Merchant is the author of Blood in the Machine and writes a newsletter of the same name. You can, of course, find out more about all of that in the show notes. Now, just as this week is a bit of a different episode, I also wanted to give you a few heads ups, I guess, as we go into 2026. You know, not any big changes to the show or anything like that, but just to let you know, as I mentioned in last week's episode, I am going to record a mailbag episode. So if you do have any questions that you wanted to ask me about tech issues or things like that, then you can certainly send a question to mailbag@techwontsave.us. Or if you're a Patreon supporter, send me a message on Patreon and your question might be included in that mailbag episode if you're interested in doing that. So I look forward to your questions and what you want to ask me. And on top of that, this year has been, a really busy one. And, you know, there has been not just a lot going on kind of news-wise, but as you will likely know, I was working on a book and it was a very busy year on my end as well. So the first two episodes in 2026, which I believe are on January 1st and January 8th, just a heads up that we'll be running either some popular interviews from the past or a recording of a talk I've given or something like that. And then new interviews will resume basically in mid-January. January 15th, I believe, will be the first fully new episode then. So there will still be content in your feed every Thursday, but maybe it'll be something that you have encountered before. I'm sure that you understand, especially this time of year, that we're all looking to try to take a bit of a break as we prepare for the year ahead. So with that said, I hope that you enjoy this conversation about the year that we've had in 2025. The subject matter is not always the greatest, but you know, it can be good to kind of recap some of these things, I think, and try to take stock of where we are in this moment. And of course, if you do enjoy the podcast, if you do enjoy this conversation, make sure to give the show a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. You can also share the show on social media or with any friends or colleagues who you think would learn from it. And of course, this show is only possible because of support from listeners like you. And so if you want to become a supporter to make sure I can keep doing this work, keep conducting these interviews to educate people on the tech industry, what it's up to have these critical conversations while getting ad-free episodes and even stickers if you support at a certain level, you can join supporters like Nikita from Oakland, Zoe from Sweden, and Nick in Denver by going to patreon.com/techwontsaveus, where you can become a supporter as well. Thanks so much and enjoy this week's conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this end of year Tech Won't Save Us live stream. If you're here for the worst person in tech results, you'll need to wait another hour before the voting closes for that. And we'll get into seeing who actually won between Elon Musk and Peter Thiel. They always seem to get to the end of this. So, you know, we'll see who comes up on top this year and who takes the crown for 2025. The biggest ghouls always seem to get there. But I'm very happy to have you joining me this evening. And of course, my two guests, who I'll introduce in just a minute. Unfortunately, Ed Anguizo Jr. couldn't join us. He is under the weather today, but still two fantastic guests to break down the year in tech and all the crazy shit that has happened right from the start of Donald Trump coming back to power, his alliance with the tech industry, and then everything rolling through the year, you know, right to where we are right now. It's been a wild one. And, you know, the tech industry and these tech billionaires just seem to be getting worse and worse and worse. But without further ado, let's get to it. Let's bring in our guests. We'll start with our friend from Australia, who's joining us from, at least from where I am, the other side of the world, maybe where you are, he's quite a bit closer. But Jathan Sadowski, of course, co-host of the This Machine Kills podcast, but also just a fantastic kind of researcher and very insightful kind of critic of the tech industry and, you know, so many different aspects of this. Of course, he was on Tech Won't Save Us earlier this year to talk about his new book, which is just fantastic. I highly recommend. Jathan, welcome to the live stream. Great to have you.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Holding it down for TMK. Ed sends his regards, but you know, sometimes you eat a bad sandwich and it hits you the wrong way.
It happens to all of us, you know. And of course, your book there right in the background where we can still all see it. Yeah.
Always be plugging.
Of course, you know, you never leave it out. It's fantastic. Great to have you join us. Of course, you know, you get a pass for not wearing a holiday sweater because the temperatures where you are quite a bit more than, you know, my part of the world. Of course, maybe I'll unveil it now. Or no, we'll wait till Brian comes in and then we can talk about my nice holiday sweater. Yes, I gave a hint there. And of course, if you looked at the little graphic I made, you'll know who else is coming. Of course, the guy who always joins me for these end of year live streams and, you know, who I even had a podcast with for a little while earlier this year, Brian Merchant, you know, the author of fantastic books like The One Device and Blood in the Machine, and now the newsletter, Blood in the Machine. Now he's gone indie and he's a proper content creator. Brian Merchant,
how dare
welcome
you
to the show.
How dare you? I am an esteemed journalist and author, very prestigious. I do not create content. just before this rewind, you know, 3 minutes ago, and I was frantically trying to figure out how to port this content onto my newsletter, and we were debating how I can best commodify this particular experience for my audience. So
yes, I need some content.
joined the races here. So good to see you as always.
That's okay. We can't criticize, you know, we're all in the content mill to some degree. There's Jathan there with a solid, stable academic job, you know, still churning out content. He can't escape.
Can't help it.
Oh no. Once you get stuck in the content, you never get out of it.
I like your sweater, Brian. You know, we could say spacey holiday. It works. Whatever. We'll go.
It's Christmas on Saturn. That's what I'm going to call it. That's what I'm going to go with today.
Yeah. I love that. You know, they can celebrate up there too, especially when we, you know, fill it with computers filled with post-humans or whatever the hell the future in store for us is. They'll be celebrating up there too in their
data center with the elves on the shelf. Yeah, just orbiting exactly.
Oh my. Well, my holiday sweater, it came in just a few days ago. We've had like mad postage delays here because, of course, I live on an island and we've had really bad weather. And so ferries weren't able to come across in boats. So we didn't get deliveries for a long time, but it's in. It arrived. And
that's a good one. Yeah.
It's my wonderful Scooby-Doo. I'm a big Scooby-Doo fan, of course.
Do you get a new sweater every year? Is that part of your...
Not every year. I last year and the year before, I had a Clippy...
The Clippy is a classic, but yeah, it was getting played. So
exactly. And, you know, I was like, I want something new this year. I love Scooby-Doo. And then I happened to see this one when I was
This is something I recently learned about Paris. I honestly didn't know that anybody loved Scooby-Doo. I thought it was like just something that was kind of like omnipresent and was at a certain age in our childhood. So it was just like, I mean, I was aware of Scooby-Doo. I watched Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Like I made the Scooby-Doo noises, but I did not know that like there were people that loved it. And Paris is one of them, which is good.
There are hidden Scooby-Doo fans among us. You know, I think you might be shocked to learn how many there are.
I was in Edinburgh one time. This was like probably like a decade ago. And I saw like, I guess I was walking around somewhere or whatnot. And I saw a Scooby-Doo cafe. And I was like, oh my God, like, what is this? I can't believe it. And I was like so excited, right? I was like, oh my God, a Scooby-Doo themed cafe. Like, this is going to be amazing. And then I went in and like, it was the most underwhelming experience in my life. Like the most basic thing, like maybe a couple Scooby-Doo like decorations here and there. I was like,
just nothing.
Nah, it was so sad.
I mean, here's some lore. A few years ago, my wife and I went as Velma and Daphne for Halloween. So, but really, it was just an excuse for her to dress up as Velma. I was Daphne, it was really an excuse for her to dress up as Velma, and I was like, all right, I'll play along. I had a beautiful red wig. We had the outfit. Like we went thrift shopping and came out with all of the stuff we needed. It was great. It was great, but you know. And Scooby-Doo still lives.
You could have pulled like a Shaggy or a Fred, but you went full Daphne. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You went a full, like that. That's the move. I get because like...
My head is made for wigs, you know?
Also, nobody would recognize Fred because Fred and Daphne were like an item or were they insinuated to be an item? They were. Okay.
They were an item. And then like Scooby and Velma or Shaggy and Velma, it was kind of like, are they sort of, you know...
Will they, won't they? Exactly. Kind of Sam and Diane.
Yeah. I feel like in the Scooby merch now, though, I know we're talking about Scooby-Doo a lot. We'll get off
the Scooby merch.
Yeah. Way too much.
But listen, I feel like they're really like playing up the like stoner element of Scooby and Shaggy, like a lot more in the merch. Maybe it was always there, but and I'm just like at an age where I'm really paying attention. But I feel like, you know,
no, it was always there.
Okay.
They're in a van. It's hippie-ish.
I feel like it's so much more overt now. Yeah. I don't know, but yeah.
No, it always was.
I feel like I'm being broadsided and this sweet, is actually the soft
innocent
launch of
Paris
and Brian's new Scooby-Doo podcast. The Scooby Crash.
rewatch podcast of the Scooby-Doo series.
This is the soft launch of Zoinks.
Yeah. This is not what I came on the show for.
We can have you as a special guest, Jathan, you know?
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Or it's either Zoinks or... I would have gotten away with it too. That's too long though for it.
Too long. Yeah. Zoinks works. I think. Okay. I'm excited to plan this for you for the new year. We know how our success rate on new podcasts. So
give it a few months.
Yeah. And I'm happy this is really working out as well. You know, I wasn't sure setting up an AI of myself was going to work to be the co-participant here.
Yeah. It's really, technology is really advanced since yeah. then. Yeah.
Thank you, Brian GPT.
Highlight from a new episode of Tech Won't Save Us. Find it wherever you get your podcasts at techwontsave.us and harbingermedianetwork.com. You listen to Harbinger Showcase on your local campus and community radio station. I'm Harbinger Director Andre Goulet in Montreal. And finally, launching in Toronto in 2006, Green Majority has become Canada's longest-running weekly environmental news hour, helping transform the environmental movement into a social justice-oriented push for sustainable society. On this clip from the show's landmark 1,000th episode, the team talk about what got them involved in the climate movement and what progress has been made since the show launched 20 years ago. Now, here's Lauren Latour and David and Stefan Hostetter with episode 1,000 of Green Majority.
Hello and welcome to the glorious new year of your new soul birth as the star that twinkles in Super Mario emerges from your chest to fly towards the moon. This is the Green Majority and it is 2026 and it is gold bricks stacked on gold bricks because we are diving in the Scrooge McDuck cave of the golden eternity that is our bank account. We're pulling from the vault of our minds and presenting it to you in a slimy, self-indulgent pudding of excessive love. And we are the Green Majority on CIUT 89.5 FM, or your local community radio station or your podcast application, Harbinger Media Network. And this is the official 1,000th episode. Of the Green Majority, which has been airing since November 3rd, 2006 on CIUT. They have been holding this thing down for so long. And we have Stefan Christian Irwin Hostetter in the house. We have Lauren Elizabeth Cor Latour in the house. We have Dave Gray Donald in the house. We personally have not produced 1,000 episodes of this show.
That's true.
But it has been on for now 19 years. Since 2006, and we are going to take you on a journey through the years. And Stefan Hostetter has crunched the numbers, and he knows just how well this planet is doing, this green globe of life that burgeons into space with breathing oxygen and carbon dioxide.
It's true.
If Stefan were a superhero, he would be Ivy. His luscious hair.
Thank you all for joining us. And yes, as they mentioned, shout out to all of the previous folks whose shoulders we stand on. Celine Kaster and Kevin Farmer are the two folks that were running it when I joined. There's in fact an earlier host who perhaps some folks can remember the name of. I have currently forgotten because I never met them. This has been such an institution that there has been a complete changeover of the guard. But the person who originally started this was a PhD student at U of T doing environmental sciences. And so the show was a little more scientific at the time. But there have been a huge number of folks who have come through at different times. And honestly, I would say that in some ways, our alumni are truly some of the most impressive pieces of this. They are doing some incredible things. If you go back and see some of the folks who were on the show and are now what they're up to, they're doing amazing. So shout out to everyone who's ever helped us get this far. So as Dave mentioned, I'm going to sort of facilitate this conversation. We're going to go through some questions I have about ourselves, some questions I have about the climate movement, and then some predictions for the future. Before I start, though, I should note that I'm not 100% certain that the first show was November 3rd. Dave Gradenal asked me if we had knew what the first episode was about beforehand, and unfortunately, I do not. Anywho, without further ado, I'll start with you, Lauren. Where were you on November 3rd, 2006? on that fateful Friday?
I was in eighth grade. And at that point, I was already starting to be annoying about climate stuff. For people that have done like story of self activities, there's always like this thing where it's like you're meant to like drill down and like find your why and like figure out what like brought you into the issue, whatever the issue in question might be. And unfortunately, mine is aggressively uncool. It was like I saw an inconvenient truth the year it came out when I was 13 at a very influential age. And like, it got me. It got me. The graphs, the visuals. I had no understanding of who Al Gore was. So I was like, this guy gets it. Stressed out. I didn't have the word anxiety. Like, that wasn't a thing that anybody talked about in 2006. But eco-anxiety had already started to set in for me at around that age.
Man, you got.
Got immediately. Immediately. And I mean, like, for what it's worth, like, the eco-anxiety existed before then. I have, like, really vivid memories of, like, watching World Wildlife Fund infomercials and just, like, sobbing in front of the television at about 4 years old. Being like, who will think of the tigers or whatever?
Dave, where were you?
It must have been a cold November night in Montreal. I was a student at McGill University, and I was going between, like, I just sort of shifted from a biology undergrad to environment, and then I was like trying to go to like what we would now call like corporate sustainability events, and just like seeing how the business community was talking about sustainability and environmental stuff. And some of them were like, this is the future, and some of them were like, this is a fad, and both of those were right. And yeah, I forgot, Lauren, thanks for reminding me, I forgot that Inconvenient Truth had come out that year. There was definitely a screening on campus, but I had sort of already been turned on to Enviro stuff. But yeah, and then got really involved in like campus politics and trying to set up a sustainability office on campus. So I was sort of like in the trajectory around that, but knew nothing about the Green Majority for several more years.
Dave Hostetter.
Who knows? Maybe even What's-His-Face, who started this program, started it because he saw Inconvenient Truth.
It is very possible.
Dang it, I'm taken to the airwaves. The people need to hear this message.
It was like a moment. It was like big thing.
It was a big
For a hot minute there, back when we thought this was actually going to be something that people would care about, right? It was like Inconvenient Truth came out, and then I remember there was like a Vanity Fair cover that was like, this is something we care about now, you guys.
Yeah, like it's rare that a documentary gets like was released in theaters. The idea that any documentary right now would actually go into theaters is like so bonkers. Did it all die with Michael Moore?
See, you are forgetting about Taylor Swift and all of her documentaries going to theater. How devastating!
All right, what was that called? Like a moment to believe, a time to fly, an atmosphere to breathe. No, I don't know. I was probably watching Pussycat Dolls and Rihanna music videos and wondering when I was going to lose my virginity.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I was in the 11th grade. I was just beginning, I think, to accept that I was not going to become a professional baseball player.
That took way too long. Are you kidding me? Should have figured that out well earlier.
Just because I was a small child who got cut from his grade 11 high school baseball team does not mean that I did not still believe in myself, Dave.
Shout out Scarborough Stingers. Shout out Birchmount Bulldogs.
I had not really considered climate action much. We did not learn about climate action in our schooling. I think we might have been like just outside of that range. And while we certainly got a lot of conversations around climate and around, you know, environmentalism from particularly my mother, I didn't really start thinking about organizing and activism until honestly about my third year of university.
Wait, you're answering a different question.
Maybe we'll use that as a pivot then to our second question. When would you say you started getting paying attention to climate action and climate change? I think, Lauren, you sort of gave us a bit of an answer already, but maybe you want to expand on that, or maybe you can think of like when you turned that anxiety into doing something.
Yeah. Good segue there. So there's sort of like different stages of it. You know what I mean? Like when I was in the fourth grade, I remember tying myself to a tree with a skipping rope because I was like, the tree's going to be cut down and I have to save it.
Were they going to cut down that tree?
Yeah, no, and they 100% did. They just waited till like I went home from school for the day. Wow. Like
honestly, that's what they do.
My teacher let me my teacher let me stay out after recess because I think he was like, you know what, good job caring about something. But then once I went home, they cut the tree down. And then like in like high school, you ran like water bottle campaigns and stuff like that. But it wasn't really until I'd say like university when I started understanding the political dimension, which is all of it. You know what I mean? Like when you're young, you don't sort of, at least I didn't take those things into consideration or understand how they interacted together. It's like when I was a child, it was like caring about climate was recycling. And it wasn't until, honestly, shout out divestment campaigning, because that was what really drew me into things. I went to school for environmental studies, but divestment campaigning and Northern Gateway were the two things that sort of got me involved in organizing spaces. Okay. And then the other one was actually because I went to school in New Brunswick. It was when people were organizing to get the fracking moratorium put in place. If folks recall, this was a long time ago now, but there was the blockade at Elsa Pugtug, where if you've seen like the image that comes out about it is there's like a line of RCMP. I wasn't there this day, obviously, but a line of RCMP officers and a woman holding a feather up in defiance. That's sort of like the iconic image that came out of the Elsa Pugtug resistance. So it was sort of that really sort of like galvanized me and pulled me from. I think prior to that, a lot of my focus had been on sort of like institutional sustainability practices in my education and in my involvement. And those were the things that sort of politicized me. And in retrospect, it's like now that I know the people that orchestrated a lot of those campaigns and were the driving forces behind them, like I've come to realize that every step of my political education that I thought was me just like exploring a path of my own volition was actually like very intentionally, carefully laid out and involved a lot of work. And it didn't mean that somebody was like taking your hand and guiding you through, but it meant that like there were organizers who were older than I was like putting the flagstones in front of me every step of the way. So I saw a Do the Math video from the Do the Math tour that was huge in the States that Bill McKibben and 350 drove. And because of that, when I was part of an environmental activism course that was funded by a funder that I still work with now as an adult at my university, like that was the campaign I pitched and that was the campaign we got involved in.
From the 1000th episode of Green Majority. Find the show archives at greenmajority.ca, at harbingermedianetwork.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. You've been listening to Harbinger Showcase on your local campus and community radio station. This episode has been brought to you by Unrigged. Learn more about Canada's coalition of more than 30 progressive publishers. You got all your independent Canadian journalism, including news, videos, and podcasts, in one place at unrigged.ca. Follow us on Instagram and Blue Sky for updates on new episodes, and subscribe to the Harbinger newsletter for a weekly Wednesday roundup from Canada's cross-country community of 83 socially and politically progressive podcasts. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Until then, I'm Harbinger director Andre Goulet in Montreal. Now back to your regularly scheduled community radio station programming.
This is Sukyun Lee, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
Celebrating Vancouver's underground rock music culture for 3 days of shows from incredible local and touring artists, the second annual Unreal City Festival takes over the Rickshaw Theatre and the Russian Hall, January 15th to 17th, featuring local artists like Worry War, Jody Glenham, CJSF chart toppers Devour, and the Houseplant. Scene veterans By a Thread, and headliner Spencer Krug of Wolf Parade, Sunset Rubdown, and Moonface. This unique festival finds bands and music artists upstairs, while downstairs you get access to the coziest grandma's living room style lounge in the city, with DJs, hot food, drinks, on-site tattoo artists, and more. The second annual Unreal City Festival, January 15th to 17th at the Rickshaw Theatre and the Russian Hall in East Vancouver. For passes, go to unrealcity.rocks or head to CJSF Music on Instagram to win tickets.